to the Chelsea Skidmore Show. I'm here with my guest journalist, Jane Borden. Hi, Jane. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited that you're here. I had come across an article that you wrote for Vanity Fair on Colts, and I read it and I was so excited to just kind of discuss them with you. I think your article specifically was focused on California Colts, but Nexium as well was kind of like the forefront of that, right?
The Peg, yeah.
Oh, the Peg. Okay. Sorry, I don't know the terminology.
Yeah. let's just talk about that. Can we just talk about leads and kickers and head? Great. Cool. Yeah. Well, the part of the idea of the article was the role that celebrities play. Mm-hmm. And Nexium certainly recruited celebrities. And so that sort of lent itself to fit into the article.
Yeah, I actually was just reading a couple more next, you know, I'll pull up and try to get new info. And I read that they were telling people that Gerard Butler and Jennifer Aniston had taken the classes too at Nexium, which I don't think they did, but they were trying to pull people in by, yeah, they definitely didn't take classes there.
Not that I know of. That's not anything I came across. And I feel like that would have been widely reported. Mm-hmm. But it's also possible because a lot of these groups will sort of spread out their materials under different names. Mm-hmm. They have like subsidiary programs or like adjacent. Nexium itself, there were 7 or 8 different programs under the umbrella. There was like ESL, I'm forgetting the name of the one.
Jeunesse.
The first.
DOS.
Jeunesse. Thank you.
SOP, yeah, Society of Protectors.
Oh yeah, that right. The men's one. Yep. But a lot of groups, and this was happening a lot in the 90s, groups would introduce a separate product that was that they marketed to businesses as training, as like employee training. Send your employees here to become better managers or whatever. But then they would get there and it was just cult indoctrination. So my point being, I can imagine a world in which, you know, Jennifer Aniston took some training course that she had no idea was even connected, but actually was. But still, I feel like that would have been reported if it were true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like you hear a lot of celebrities talking about earlier days of Scientology or taking an ESP course. Is it called ESP?
In Scientology?
Yeah, or EST. I know that a lot of, just speaking on celebrities taking classes, like earlier stages when they don't really realize what it is. Like I remember even Seinfeld maybe saying he took like a course in the 70s or something. And I think a lot of people pop in and take the course and then they like leave and then some other people stay around and then it develops more into, you know, what these organizations are today, which are cults. I mean, I'm sure they don't start out that way.
Yeah, not at all. And sometimes what's happening is the cult starts out rather benign and then over time becomes, the leader becomes more controlling, more addicted to power. The weird sex stuff starts happening. Violence, you know, sometimes it escalates and follows that classic pattern, and the pattern is very classic. Other times what's happening is that the group is already really messed up, mm-hmm. At the top and in a very closed off fashion that people don't know about, and that was certainly happening at Nexium. But then underneath it are all these other classes and all these other people who have no idea that anything sinister is happening. And are actually getting something beneficial from whatever the group is peddling. And of course, that's most often the case with like therapy cults or self-improvement cults, where, I mean, you know, you if you watch The Vow, the first act of any documentary about a cult is when audiences are going like, oh, this looks good. I want to sign up for this.
Yeah. Because
they bring you in with something that's actually, otherwise nobody would ever join, you know? Mm-hmm. But definitely no one joins knowing what's actually going on or what's actually going to happen.
Yeah. One of my favorite cult documentaries is Holy Hell, about Buddhafield. Mm-hmm. Have you seen Holy Hell?
Buddhafield, yeah.
And I love how they just start out. That is so true. Like, it's almost like they really want to prove to the audience, like, hey, we're not like dumb. Like, it really started out like totally awesome. Like, we were just having so much fun. It was the time of our lives. And then it got dark, you know, like it's always that like shift, like everything is so awesome. And then it's not. I wonder.
Yeah, it's almost.
Right. I wonder.
It's almost like VH1 behind the music.
Yeah. Yeah, with Nexium, it's funny because it's like, I know that he originally had that pyramid scheme, like an MLM company.
Yeah.
And then from there, I guess, and I love how they always start as like a success program or self-improvement program. Like, have you ever been to Landmark or heard of Landmark?
I've heard of it. I've not done it, but I'm curious.
I had such a horrible experience. I never was like, I have hated the idea of cult and like have been very paranoid about them my entire life. I just like always thought it was weird. And one of my best friends from back home in New York, his mom was like a Landmark person and she volunteered and they have these things where they like, you know, they have the volunteers who work for free and like, and they try to like suck you into like a one-off, like a one night orientation. And, he had asked me to come and I didn't want to go, but he was like, come on, like, just do me a favor. So I went one night and I didn't like it at all. So I didn't come back. And then like years later, when I was out here in LA, I was in a 12-step program and a girl who was sponsoring me at the time was like super into Landmark. And she's like, come do it. And I was like, I don't want to, I don't like it. And she basically like did something really fucked up where she was like, well, this would really be doing me a favor if you did it. Like, I'll get, you know, which you shouldn't really be doing if you're in a 12-step program sponsoring someone. It's like completely the opposite of what you should be doing. Yeah. And I was in like a vulnerable place. Like I had a sprained ankle. I was on crunches and I had just been dumped and I felt really depressed and like broken. And like there, and she was like, this will make you feel so much better. And I was like, and they're like, we'll do it for free. Like, we'll get you the scholarship. And I was like, okay, fine. So I agreed to do this 3-day thing. I went to the first day and it like, I fucking hated it. And I got kicked out the very next morning. Cause I like started a fight with, the volunteers that walk around and I was like, this place is fucking weird. I don't like this. And they kicked me out and it like sent me into this like breakdown because they break you down and then they try to like rebuild you, but they kicked me out after they broke me down. And I was like so fucked up for like a weekend, like for like for 3 days, I was like nonstop. Like, it's like they do some weird shit to like crack you open.
Yeah.
So like
they're called LGATs, large group awareness trainings. And these, again, were huge in the 90s and early aughts. Obviously they're still happening. And that's the thing is that they break you down and then they try to rebuild you in a way that leads you to only serve whoever's making money off you. Right. And people wind up in being like committed to institutions. I mean, it ruins people's lives. Like they never get their brains back.
Totally.
And it's, I think there's a really blurry line between MLMs specifically and cults, because it's like at the end of the day, someone is manipulating you for their self-interests, not your own. And like, that's the difference between legitimate religion and cult. Like there's not, cults and religions have 99 things in common. The difference is you know, when you give your money to the church, is it going to like feed the homeless, or is it buying Rolexes for, you know, the second coming of Christ?
For OSHA, or OSHO, whatever his name was.
Yeah.
OSHO, I think.
Yeah.
Wild Country.
Well, eventually, right, because Bhagwan.
Bhagwan, yeah, yeah.
But then he changed his name, you're right. We're talking about Wild Wild Country for anyone who hasn't seen the wonderful Netflix series on in Oregon.
So what'd you think of the vow, the whole series itself?
So, first of all, caveat, I have not seen the last three episodes yet. I think that one of the reasons we have such incredible documentaries about cults is because the leaders are such megalomaniacs that they want every move they make to be recorded on film. And also they want to be famous, which they talk about that in The Vow. He specifically recruited Mark Vicente in order to like shoot footage of him. That's the whole reason, in my opinion. I mean, also mm-hmm. he had some like cachet, and I really want to see the footage of the narrative film they were making. But the flip side of that is that all of this footage is from Mark Vicente. So we're hearing his story and Sarah's story. Mm. But I understand in the last few episodes, though it does kind of like open up a little bit more and become a little bit more journalistic. So I'm looking forward to that. But I think The Vow is, at least the first six episodes, is largely Mark's story. And I don't know how reliable of a narrator he is. I just don't know enough about him. I mean, he was really involved in recruitment. I mean, he did some shady things too, and he owns up to mm-hmm. that a little bit, but it's also like, you know, it's biased. I guess that's the two-word version of what I just yeah. spent 3 minutes saying.
He rubs me the wrong way. There's something
he
weird
a lot
about him. Oh, really?
Yeah, I have a friend, an acquaintance of mine in LA, who was recruited pretty strongly by him to join NXIVM several years ago. And she does not like him at all.
Yeah. Any details about what he did or?
It's her story, but I will say just sort of relentless,
mm-hmm.
you know, never violent or anything, or he didn't like come on to her or anything like that, but just like, quit asking me. I said, no.
Right.
You know? And it was always like, well, like you said, we'll come for free. We'll sponsor you. Just sign this contract. Just pushy. And like, she mentioned a sort of personality trait of like, he would lead with some kind of an apology. Like, I noticed I did such and such and I feel really bad about that. But then there was immediately an ask.
Manipulative.
I don't know. That's not my call to make, and it's her story. But I think he does rub some people the wrong way.
Yeah. So a friend of mine, she was in New York a couple of years ago, and she was hanging out with a friend of hers who was an actress, and they were invited to a Shakespeare reading at an actress's house. It happened to be Allison Mack's house, and this was a DOS like initiation. And
oh
so
my
they,
God. Wait, she was just invited to this like super secret high ranking.
Yeah. So I'm assuming like her friend, I'm assuming they were all like three attractive young girls who, you know, wanted to be actresses, had like, you know, the bright eyes kind of thing. And so they went to the reading, and it was at her like townhouse or something in Brooklyn. And it was like really, really weird, she said. And she said that everyone was participating in the reading, but it was very sexual and they were like making them like moan. So my friend was super creeped out and she left. but her friend, who was the one who wanted to be the actress, ended up staying. And they were trying to, like, very aggressively recruit her for DOS. And it fucked her up so much that she had to get a restraining order against them and move out of New York.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Just kind of piggybacking off of what you said, like, they clearly, like, are extremely pushy in their methods and harassing. And, it's crazy because you would think it's like, wouldn't you just want someone who was interested in doing it? Like, why keep pushing? I don't understand that.
I think it's a numbers game. Mm-hmm. Most people, the number quoted to me is that 95% of people who join cults leave within the first 2 years.
Mm.
If you're going to have, sorry, I'm just moving my thing back, but if you're going to have anyone stick around, I mean, you got to pull in a lot of people. And if you're specifically recruiting people to have sex with Keith Raniere, who has really specific requirements of what his sex slave should look like, mm-hmm. then I think your task is even harder.
Yeah, I know. I read a lot about that. It was, you have to be under 100 pounds, beautiful, of course. Very sick, very sick. I thought, something. Yeah. Sorry, I'm all over the place because there's every time we talk about a specific thing, it brings up something. Yeah. What I thought was really strange was how Keith wanted everything recorded, and even on the walks, on these 3 a.m. walks that all these people took together, the sound is perfect. So that means they were both mic'd up. Like, how how egotistical is Keith to have to say, we both get mic'd up because you're going to hold on to these tapes. And it was odd that Mark they recorded every conversation. Like, it was kind of crazy to me that they already had that.
No, it's insane. It's insane. The one thing that I can't get out of my head, I don't remember which episode it was, but Mark calls Keith and he says that thing about, like, I'm hearing that some of the girls look like zombies. Mm-hmm. Do you remember this? And mm-hmm. then Keith just immediately spins some bullshit about how he had this study about people who think they see zombies, but it's actually like their own self-hatred or something. I mean, it was so, that tactic of manipulation was laid so bare and transparent in that interaction where, I mean, on one hand you could say like, oh, really quick on the cuff to come up with that. And at one point it's like, no, it was so obviously BS.
It's like, is anyone checking his sources with all the shit that he says to everyone? You know what I thought was funny? I'm going to read this to you, actually, because I read this yesterday in one of the articles about how when he was sentenced to life in prison. It's just a quick thing. It says the group sales pitch claimed that Mr. Raniere was a genius with one of the highest IQ scores in the world. In reality, prosecutors have said he graduated with a 2.26 grade point average from Rensselaer, whatever it says, Polytech Institute in Troy, New York, after failing some of the math and science classes that he later bragged about taking.
Yeah. New York Times.
I think so. 2.26. Meanwhile, he was telling everyone he was a fucking genius, and he then he didn't create a new type of math if he failed the math.
he's a liar. One of the people I interviewed for my article is an anti-cult expert and deprogrammer. Mm-hmm. He's actually in the vow. He's the guy, Rick Ross is his name, which is amazing.
I've heard of Rick Ross before.
Yeah. He does good work. And he knows a lot. He's an excellent source of information. But this is something he talked about with me during our interview. He was like, Keith Raniere is dumb. He got sued by Nexium. He's been sued by, I think, 5 different cults. And most of them give up at a certain point, but Keith did not. And as a result, he was in hours and hours of depositions, which is something that David Miscarriage at Scientology has never done. He's always refused to be deposed because you're under oath and it's all recorded. And then it's all like public record, or I don't know how much of it is public record, but anyway, Rick's point was that he believes this is part of Keith's downfall, because then everyone had all this information that he had given in deposition. But one of the things he talked about is he was like, I spent so much time with this guy. He's an idiot.
I know. Why did everyone think he was, I mean, why did everyone then treat him like he was so smart? And like, why go to a 3 a.m. volleyball game? It's and jump up to take
this is the $1 million question.
Yeah.
Right. Why do we fall for it?
That's what I don't understand. Hey, are you still trying to think of the perfect gift idea for your coworker or friend who has everything? Nosh Butter's small batch craft nut butters have got you covered. These plant-based, gluten-free nut butters make awesome gifts for the foodies in your life. Spread them on toast or waffles, bake with them, whisk them into sauces or dressings, add a dollop to your yogurt or granola for breakfast. Really, the Nosh abilities are endless. And for a limited time, Nosh has bundle of butters with flavors like pistachio almond, golden cashew almond, and hazelnut almond on sale for only $30. Shop online at noshbutters.com and follow at noshbutters on Instagram for wholesome and delicious snacking inspiration. Use promo code Skidmore for an extra 5% off your order. This offer is valid through December 15th, 2020, so hurry up and snag yours before they sell out. Don't forget, check out Nosh Butters and use code Skidmore for an extra 5% off your order. That's what, you know, in some of your article was talking about how you think Southern California is part of the problem, or do you think it's...
Well, I think Southern California has gotten an unfair stereotype, when in reality anybody can fall for a cult anywhere at any time in their life, from any demographic, from any background. The mind is much more pliable than we think, and because cults want money and fame, and because cults want people who don't have generations of family with roots already tied to multiple organizations, cults come to California to recruit. And that's the reason there have been so many out here. And that's the reason why California is always in the news in relation to cults and Los Angeles and celebrities in particular. But in reality, anyone can fall for a cult. And I think that's what we're seeing with a lot of MLMs. Again, not all MLMs are cults, but I think some of them are. And I think the lines are really blurry. And I think we shouldn't blame people for trust. You know, it's very natural to follow a leader, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's very natural to want to be with a community who's trying to better itself. That's specifically why con men have created cults in the way that they have. And then as far as like mind control, it's really not hard. I mean, you could Google it right now and it's like 10 points, how to control somebody's mind. And then you just go do it. I mean, DIY your own cult. Seriously. That's what people are doing. And it's really just domestic abuse on a larger scale. I mean, it's got all the hallmarks of it, right? It's not about like, it's always money. Like, money's the through line. Money's the common denominator is fraud. Not all of these groups have sex abuse. A lot of them do. And certainly not all of them have violence. Very few become violent, but it's always fraud. However, it's not usually about fraud. It's not usually about money. It's about power and control. And that you can never have enough. And so I think you remove people from any kind of community they have. You cut them out from their friends and family. You mess up their biological circadian rhythms. You keep them up at 3 o'clock in the morning going to volleyball or going on walks or whatever it is. You, like you said at Landmark, you get broken downs. You can be rebuilt. You share collateral. You share embarrassing stuff about yourself. And then you instill real belief, because a lot of the times when you get in deep with these organizations, even once you see the red flags, you can't back out because it's too late. You've gone too far. And if you don't truly believe in it, then you can't live with yourself or the things you've done. So you have to believe.
That's interesting. Yeah. From a psychological perspective, it's almost easier at that point to stay in. I guess it's probably similar to how hard it is to leave an abusive relationship for some people.
100%.
Yeah.
And that came up in previous cases against Keith Raniere with the girl he had locked in a room for 2 years. Is that
this, I don't know about that. Ago. What was that?
Yeah, I think it was one of the three sisters. There were three sisters. He was having a relationship with all of them. He forced all of them to have abortions. He had a child with one of them, the oldest, I think. Mm-hmm. One of them was underage, and that's part of what took him down.
Oh yeah, 15, and one of right? them, I read about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of them he had locked in a room for 2 years, and like part of her family still
supports him.
It doesn't believe her. Yeah, still doesn't support her. I might be conflating two different people, but I think this is the same story. At any rate, he had someone locked in a room for 2 years, and the judge was like, why didn't you leave? Because the door wasn't locked.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the judge asked that. He was like, well, why didn't you leave? And it's classic domestic abuse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read about that. I think the family did support him. I think it was he had sex with all three sisters, a baby with one of them, and the family and the father of the daughters still support him even after all this stuff came out, which I think was like the most disturbing yeah. part. Yeah, when I was at Landmark, I was like, you know, highly like observant about like, I was trying to like kind of like pick apart all the tactics they were using. And it's like super bright fluorescent lights. It's 8 a.m. to like, it was, you know, like a 10, 12 hour day. Hardly any breaks, like no bathroom breaks really. One break for like dinner, but there was no lunch, no snacks. So you're starving. And they don't want you talking to anyone else. And we broke off in groups to go eat, and we were given assigned groups. And I don't know if I was being overly paranoid, but I felt like there was like a person who worked there in each of the groups, but posing as someone who was, sure. yeah. Like it was very calculated. And I remember something that really bothered me is that they asked for a volunteer to come up and talk about like a problem they had. And someone said, when I was younger, I was molested and it's, you know, ruined my life. And then the woman, completely unempathetic, unsympathetic, really coldly was like, well, that's a story. That's a story you have to get over. How do you feel now? And then he goes, like, I can do anything. Oh, and it was just that fast. And I was like, oh, he's like
a plant. He's
totally a plant. I couldn't think of the word. I was like, he's a plant. Yeah. And they're like trying to trick everyone that this is so easy. And I remember it was like so disturbing to me. And it was just so strange. And yeah, so they probably do have plants and all of these kind of initial meetings that they have with people. And I guess some people are, you know, hooked into it and some people aren't. What I always am trying to understand, and I know that I did go to like, yes, I was extremely vulnerable having a bad fucking day. And I agreed to go to the thing at the, you know, at the pressure from someone. But like, who are the type of people who like stay in these things and who go to these things? They're They're just like followers. They're vulnerable. I mean, that's what I'm always trying to understand.
I don't think there is a, I think there are moments of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. I think people join cults when they're in a moment of transition and when they're dealing with something really tough. So cults recruit on college campuses.
Oh.
Cults recruit people who are recently divorced. It's moments of vulnerability and moments of unattachment. That's when people join cults. Mm. Some arguments are made that, generally speaking, people who are super skeptical don't get sucked in, and people who are more like open do, and that's possible. I haven't looked into psychological studies into that, if they exist, but I know that there have been psychological studies done on people leaving cults, psychological assessments, and there is nothing quote unquote clinically insane about any of them.
Did Rick Ross say anything about deprogramming and what the process like that is? Is that usually something that a family hires him for?
Yeah, family hires him. He's done like 500 of them. Deprogrammers, just for the record, there's some people aren't sure that's the right way to go about it. There's some contentiousness between like deprogrammers and guys on the more academic side of cults. But I don't know. I mean, if I had a kid, I would call a deprogrammer.
Yeah.
So he's done more than like 500 of them, and he describes the process as a thawing. So he's like, you know, when you're plugged in to the cult, you're frozen. In that community, and then once you get pulled away from it, it takes a while to sort of for your mind to start thinking for itself again, and to remember your connections with your community and all that stuff. But he says that it always happens that when you remove the person from the leader, there's a thawing that happens. And that's what happened with Nexium. As soon as Keith was in jail, certainly plenty of people still support him, but a lot of people were kind of just like, oh, I mean, a lot of people didn't know it was happening. Right. And then they were just like, as soon as they found out, they were like, oh my God, you know, never mind. And then a lot of people, there was like a thawing process. And I think you saw that on The Vow. You saw,
with Mark India
struggle with it. Sarah go through it. You saw, Mark's wife, I guess she was the first one to kind of,
Bonnie.
But I like that analogy. I like the way you said that.
The thawing, yeah, that completely makes sense. Yeah, India, Catherine's daughter, who has a 4-part Stars mini series, I guess, kind of, or mini doc, whatever. Following,
did you watch
story.
It?
No, has it come out yet?
Oh, no. I thought for some reason it had. I don't know.
Maybe it did. I did see it like kind of pop up in the news recently. Yeah, I mean, you know, she still took a long process, I think, because she wasn't even ready to be a part of The Vow when it was happening. And she didn't want to do any sort of, you know, public confrontation about it until, you know, it had been a while since she was out, and probably a couple months down the line, she was ready to tell her side of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It looked like Bonnie had the hardest time out of anyone.
Bonnie, thank you.
Who was Mark's wife.
Well, I would imagine that because she was alone.
I know.
As Mark started to see the light, he had Bonnie being like, yes, 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 yes. Mm-hmm. But she had to keep it all to herself. And then even when she did tell her husband, he was like, no. That's not right.
Yeah. Something they talked about in the last episode that Keith wanted Bonnie to do. He made her lick a puddle, like a dirty puddle, and he wanted her to run into a tree and like slam her face into the tree to show that she wasn't afraid of anything. So it's like, I can't even imagine what other disturbing things. Sorry, what were you saying?
Yeah. No, I was just going to say another thing that Rick Ross said about Keith is that he's a misogynist. He's a classic misogynist. And from what I've heard, that becomes very apparent in the last three episodes of The Vow. He hates women. He wants to control them. And he hates women. Sarah Edmondson she did an Instagram live with Whitney Cummings yesterday, right when the news broke. And she shared that she had provided a recorded testimony. She couldn't be in court, they played it in court. And she said in the testimony, she called Keith, a parasite. I'm forgetting the second adjective, and a liar. Which are the three things that he always said were women's worst characteristics, or most dominant characteristics or something. I'm forgetting what she said. And then she was like, said to Whitney, she's like, that's called projection.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a sociopath.
Totally. And then in your article, when you were saying specifically you think Southern California, was that also just kind of like the celebrity idea as well?
Yeah, it's so there's three basic reasons why I believe, according to my research, that cults have proliferated in California and Southern California specifically. First of all, California has historically been what academics call unchurched. So most of the big, the missions would be an exclusion from the rule, but exception, sorry, is the word I'm looking for. But most of the major faiths that came over with immigration sort of settled on the East Coast. So that means that residents in California, if you're a religious person, you were looking for a group. So there were all sorts of new religious movements out here, most of which were legitimate and interesting. And, you know, the New Age movement came out of that. There was a huge influx of religious movements from Southeast Asia after immigration laws changed in 1965. And they all settled on the West Coast. So there's lots of kind of new religion happening out here. And it's very common and normal to be like, oh, what's this new group? I'll check it out. Mm-hmm. So that made it very easy for predators and con men to come in saying like, hey, I've got this new religious movement. Mm-hmm. The second reason is that California has always been synonymous with wealth, starting with the gold rush. And there historically has been a huge amount of destructive cults and groups in around San Francisco. And then also, of course, with Hollywood in Southern California. And cults go after money. So often even cults are everywhere. It's estimated right now that there's 1,000 in America.
Whoa.
Estimates also put about 1,000 in Europe. Most of them are very small. A lot of them are online now, online exclusively. Rick said he recently pulled a guy out of a cult who had already given like $30,000 or something to this woman online. He had never met her. He had never been IRL with anyone in the group.
Whoa.
So at any rate, cults can start anywhere, but once they grow, they start opening up other branches, which you saw happening with Nexium.
Mm-hmm.
And so usually when they do that, they open in cities. They go after cities because that's where the money is. And that's where the largest concentrations of populations are. And if you're looking for members, because 95% of the people you recruit leave within 2 years, then you're going to need rich people and a lot of them. So often that has meant that cults come to California or they Southern California, Los Angeles, or they start in Los Angeles as well. And then the third reason is celebrity, as we talked about earlier. it's your best recruitment tool is to get influencers. I mean, it's the same thing that happens in marketing. It's PR.
Yeah, that makes me think of the Source family and the Bikram yoga movement.
Handle.
Both landing in California.
Yes.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
The Source family is so interesting to me, and I really want to dig deeper into that because the documentary, which is wonderful, I loved it, is also very biased, right? Because it's co-produced by one of the Aquarians, Isis, I believe, who's still very devoted to Father Yod.
I didn't realize that. Yod?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Again, that's where they got all the footage. The producers worked in concert with her, and she's a co-producer. And so we heard a really, it was honest. They talked about the fact that he had killed a guy, but apparently he was pretty honest about that too. And they also, the documentary also talked about the fact that medicine wasn't allowed in. People weren't allowed to go to doctors. And then obviously, of course, underage sex and polygamy and all that. But there wasn't a ton of violence, and he was not painted as a sociopath. In my opinion, and I don't know if this is who he was or not, but in my opinion, the depiction was of a man who was corrupted by power, which of course is part and parcel of any cult. It's not just that these people are, they're con men from the start. And then in addition, on top of that, they get corrupted by absolute power. And that's when things really go off the rails. But it's hard to tell how much of a con man or sociopath Father Yod was from the start and how much he was just corrupted by power. And I find that fascinating because I'm very interested in groups that are legitimate and then go wrong.
Have you seen Children of God? I think it's the one with the guy named Father Michael, maybe. And he says he's a prophet of Jesus.
Is this the group that the Phoenix kids grew up in?
No, I don't think so.
River and Joaquin and... Okay.
I don't think so, but it was he was having sex with he basically had to have sex with all the women in the group. It was very disturbing.
Yeah, almost always.
Yeah. Have you ever seen any of the documentaries about the kids who are in those Christian boarding schools where they beat them? I saw a super disturbing one. I think that took place in Brazil. Something Jesus.
I don't know about that, but that's upsetting.
Very disturbing. Yeah, I wrote a letter to the state of California asking them to they tell you how you can write to, people to try to ban them because they have these, schools where they beat people, and it's very shocking. I kind of went on a downward spiral of watching, you watch this, you might like this. So yeah, a lot of stuff out there. It's I feel like it's, it's coming out a lot more into light about, people are learning more about cults and kind of hopefully can identify them more, and hopefully they slow down. But I mean, there's probably always happens, a new one. Yeah, there's going to be another one.
That's the thing. A cult gets out of control. There's a takedown. There's a splashy media stories. Everyone talks about it. And then nothing happens. Mm-hmm. What I would like to see happen is I would like to see legislation passed, making it illegal to let's not just criminalize the violence that happens eventually. Let's criminalize the steps that lead to the violence, forced labor, having people work for free, or having people, if you're going to have a group like this, then everyone has to be allowed a certain amount of sleep, or, I mean, obviously a lot of this stuff would be different that would be different to legislate, but you know, like you can't sit in a training session for 10 straight hours.
Mm-hmm. But I don't see anyone following those rules, you know?
Yeah, but what happens with these groups is that they say, you know, people call the press. I mean, people have been trying to take down NXIVM for years, but they didn't technically do anything wrong.
Right. And they weren't able to until, I mean, it you know, they kind of show the path of how hard it was until they finally got to the FBI. And even still, when they were going to, I think, you know, the Albany police or whoever, like, no one cared until they really found out about, like, the branding, or they needed, like, a better angle on it, too, which, you know, yeah. It's crazy because it's like, they had to gather so much information to try to convince them, and it shouldn't be that hard. They should just say, this fucked up thing is happening. Can you guys at least come investigate it? But I guess they need like a ton of, you know, info on it.
They need a ton of evidence. And part of the reason why no one wants to touch it is because Ranieri went after everybody. Mm-hmm. He had a bottomless bank account. And the harassment and the lawsuits was endless. And the reason why is because it's a deterrent and it works. So we have to cut off these groups before they grow strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you, Jane, so much for coming on and talking cults. This was so fun. Where can our listeners find you and read some more of your articles and check out your book?
Yeah, thanks. I'm Jane Borden on Instagram, and my website's janeborden.com. All my articles are there. You can see information about my first book, which is not about cults. It's a memoir, funny memoir about being a Southerner in New York, about my 20s, basically. And stay tuned for hopefully more content coming. We'll see. I'm super interested in this now. I was spent the summer researching the biological origins of religion in humans for a different project, which I'm now applying to cults for potentially something else. We'll see.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you so much.
Bye. Thank you.